So it is 2 p.m. on a Monday, and this is Lee Fraser with Queer Quarks, a queer talk and music show about a range of queer media, pop culture, and current events. And today I want to talk about, well, a number of things, really. I want to talk a little bit about contributing to the community in terms of direct, actionable, useful things, or something that's also useful, in my opinion, visible symbols of support followed up by, you know, assertive actual support. And so part of why I want to talk about these things today is that, of course, we recently had the Trans Day of Remembrance on Saturday, and that was November 20th. And if you're not familiar with the Trans Day of Remembrance, it's sometimes hard for me to create programming around it because, like many remembrance events, the Trans Day of Remembrance is about remembering people who've been harmed, who've been murdered. So I'll tell you a bit from queerevents.ca, and I think that this site is extremely useful because hopefully you'll be able to look for other queer events that you might support or that you might want to be involved in, and because they have resources on there as well that are really useful for basic education, for getting an idea of what trans rights look like. And so that's something where this year, because, you know, in-person events, especially for a marginalized, vulnerable community, are not a good idea. The last thing we want is for that community to be harmed by the transmission of COVID. This is a good opportunity to take the time, say, that you would have taken to attend a vigil on the Transgender Day of Remembrance and use that time to spread education. And that can be in a specific way. If you are someone who already knows about trans rights, don't sit complacently by if you have a transphobic relative, because that's the kind of thing that drives the continued tolerance of trans women of color in particular being murdered. And so to tell you a bit about the background of this, I will say that in this episode in general, not all of the topics that I'm going to talk about are going to be explicitly triggering, but Trans Day of Remembrance, that discussion might be triggering for the discussion of harm towards trans people. And in general, if you feel the way that I do sometimes, which is that you're not able to take in the increased awareness of violence towards people like us today, then I'd recommend maybe you skip this episode or think about it on another occasion. You know, it's cached online. You can access the episodes online. And I know that it's a hard topic because some days I can't bear to talk about it. So with that said, from the queerevents.ca website, the Transgender Day of Remembrance is an internationally recognized day. So it's not just Canada, November 20th every year, all sorts of places. And this day was set aside to memorialize people killed due to anti-transgender hatred or prejudice. Now, this event in particular was created to mark Rita Hester's passing. So Rita Hester was murdered on November 28th, 1998. Now, I'd like to take a moment to explicitly say that, of course, this is something where a number of years have passed. So it's 2021 right now. So 23 years have passed since Rita Hester's murder. And like most murders of transgender people, it's not been solved. So Rita Hester's murder did begin a movement that was specifically around remembering our dead online, and a vigil, candlelight vigil in San Francisco in 1999. So remembering, too, that, of course, this was not the first occasion that it was an issue that trans women were murdered. This has happened, unfortunately, with great frequency throughout history as well. Trans people, and in particular trans femmes and trans women, are often murdered because of who they are, because they are a threat to people's complacency in the binary, because they are a threat in some cases to the masculinity even of men who have loved them. So Rita Hester has a story that is so similar to all of the stories that we hear today. So Rita Hester was a black trans woman. She was gorgeous. She was living her life, and she was killed in her apartment. So she was killed in her home, a space that should be safe for many of us. And again, I do want to give you a trigger warning here because of the fact that, of course, this is a discussion of violence. And often I avoid discussing violence because of the fact that it's triggering for a lot of trans folks. And it's a common way that people like us are discussed in the community. So it's a very common way that we see people portrayed in movies. So the first movie that I ever saw that was about a transgender person was Boys Don't Cry, which is a powerful movie, which does unfortunately have the portrayal of a trans boy by a cisgender woman, by Hilary Swank. Many people are rightfully critical of it. I will say at the time that I saw it, it was very powerful for me because I was quite young and it was the first portrayal I ever saw of a transgender person in a movie. And of course, it depicts the end of the life and like a period near the end of the life and the violent death of Brandon Tina. So he was a young trans man who, like many transgender people, was killed when he was very young. So I will tell you that, of course, a lot of people don't want to think about and dwell on the violence that face transgender people. So many times I really, really prefer to focus on, I don't want to say even prefer, but it's healthier for me as a person to focus on the strides that trans folks have made, the amazing transgender people, you know, who are lawyers and activists and politicians and living their lives in amazing and thriving ways, because we do need that. We do need to talk about it, and we do need to think about it all the time. And that's something that is so important because we don't often get pictures of trans lives thriving. So that is so important to me. And also because, of course, we don't want trans women or anyone in the trans community to listen to programs ostensibly about us or for us and just constantly hear about our violent deaths. So that's something that is in a way directly harmful, even when it's linked to activism. And those two things can coexist. So it's not something that the harm disappears because of the fact that we are trying to honor and do something important. So I don't want to dispense with those things, of course. It's not a bad thing to honor and consider these events, and it's, in my opinion, incredibly necessary. But at the same time, if you have a transgender person in your life who doesn't observe the Transgender Day of Remembrance, or you know, maybe avoid stories or programming that are directly about violence towards transgender people, that is an extremely reasonable choice, and they should never be made to feel bad about that. Cisgender people should be the ones who are listening and attending and supporting and driving events like this in a lot of ways through their participation, because cisgender people are part of and have in common the identity with the larger group of society that is not reacting to transgender murders and that is perpetrating it, because it's cisgender people who are murdering transgender people. So it's one of those things where I think that there is a responsibility that should be in many ways on a group that's not part of the group that's being targeted, to try to do something about it. The unfortunate thing is that for many, many groups that are targeted in this way, it is the people who are affected, who are organizing these events. And I don't ever want people to forget or minimize the pain and harm that can come from even when you are doing something, you know, to honor and remember a friend, that you still have to maybe go through that process every year, or be the person who is fighting for their rights and having to think every day about their death and their murder, and focus on these harms in an attempt to ensure they don't happen to anyone else, but also in a way that obviously is likely very, very difficult for your life. So the Transgender Day of Remembrance is something that was started in 1999 by transgender advocate Gwendolyn Ann Smith as a vigil to honor the memory of Rita Hester. And I'm quoting here from glad.org. And if you'll remember, there is an event that preceded it in 1998 that I mentioned earlier, Remembering Our Dead Web Project and the Candlelight Vigil in 99 then was the way to start an annual Trans Day of Remembrance. And so let's not forget the work of transgender advocate Gwendolyn Ann Smith, who was working to ensure that annually people had to think about this and had to at least be confronted with the fact that this violence continues to happen. So to quote Gwendolyn Ann Smith here, the Transgender Day of Remembrance seeks to highlight the losses we face due to anti-transgender bigotry and violence. I am no stranger to the need to fight for our rights, and the right to simply exist is first and foremost. With so many seeking to erase transgender people, sometimes in the most brutal ways possible, it is vitally important that those we lose are remembered and that we continue to fight for justice. So that quote is on the glad.org website. And obviously, I agree with and support the work of Gwendolyn Ann Smith in this, but I want to say in particular that those we lose are remembered is not just important for remembering the people themselves, all of whom represent a valuable and important part of all of their friends and families' lives that was taken away from them, but also that those individual lives represent a greater loss to the trans community. So I've mentioned this before, but when we look at the trans community and we hear people say, oh, this is a young person thing, this is a trendy thing, there's just a bunch of young trans people. One, I am overjoyed that there are more and more young trans folks coming out. And that is exciting, that is wonderful to me, and I'm so happy that younger and younger people are able to find the terms and the words in the community to talk about their identity earlier on in their lives. However, it's obviously not a young, trendy thing for a number of reasons, of course. As someone who examines and looks at evidence in my work, I'm always very annoyed by people who ignore evidence and reasons behind something, who don't make use of logic in examining why a community is composed of the people that it is. And one of the reasons why there are always more young trans folks than there are older trans folks is because generationally, many of them are murdered every year. So think about the murder of Rita Hester and when that occurred. Rita Hester is someone whose murder has not been solved. So people are not making a difference in this. And she was a young woman. She was a happy, outgoing, beautiful person. She was born in 1963. If she'd not been murdered, she would only be 2 years older than my mother today. So one of the reasons that we don't have trans people in their 50s who are able to stand up to the world as an example of, these are, you know, many people with the enduring identities, with the experience of coming out in different times, is because you have murdered them. So living in a cisgender society where the majority of people have for many years not even acknowledged the right of trans people just to be who they are, or to live their lives in, say, their own apartment, which is where Rita Hester was murdered, or to walk streets or have jobs, which is another way that many of the harms come to many different trans women. When we have a society where people who murder or enact violence against trans people are punished more lightly, then we allow the world to ignore that violence. We allow them to be murdered. We allow them in many ways to be forgotten, not just as individuals, but as part of a group that historically has had increasingly deadly years every year. And if that were another group, maybe we would see it differently. In particular, I like to bring up this reminder. There are so many people that don't understand that we can lose the advances that we have made, and that even after we've obtained our rights, we're not always safe because of the fact that trans people are a minority. Even if we look at the greater group of 2SLGBTQ people, which ostensibly I would like to assume support trans folks, but in reality is not true, that is a small minority. And when we live in a society where, you know, majority vote determines things, our safety is always going to be in the hands of people who don't share our identity, in the hands of cisgender people, in a society within Canada where the vast majority of our representatives are cisgender people who don't necessarily care about transgender lives, or who, in the case of many, for example, conservative politicians, actively oppose the rights of many people in the 2SLGBTQIA community. That is something that means that we'll never really be safe. And I hate saying that because it comes off in a way that seems discouraging. Maybe we could consider ourselves safe if a society is created where the idea of harming a transgender person, especially harming them specifically for who they are, is horrifying to everyone. In a society where if anyone saw violence or slurs directed at trans folks on the street, everyone who saw it would stand up and say something, maybe that society would be relatively safe. And I mean, there would be many, many days to go and many changes to make in society before that is something that happens. And it's not only that we have a long way to go, but that it's an active fight at every step. So transgender rights are opposed constantly. They're still something people see as very acceptable to not only ignore, but to actively direct vitriol and hatred and indifference towards. And so there's many steps to take before ostensibly there would even be basic protections. And I would like to say we have basic protections right now because of the passage of Bill C-16 in 2016, which added to the Canadian Human Rights Act the protection of people on the basis of gender identity, and ostensibly put protections in place for trans folks, but those don't always mean on the ground protections. And as we can clearly see from laws in many countries, having protections under the law doesn't mean having protections at a social level. And that is where the difference is really made, because when it is unacceptable to even consider directing violence against trans women, for example, when it is unacceptable and unheard of to harass or tease or shame a man for dating a trans woman, which is something that leads to a lot of violence against trans women, that is when we will see these murders stop. And so even when we are protected ostensibly under the law, of course we can see from many groups that are disproportionately targeted within Canada and other countries, that protection on a ground level is what would really scale back the violence. So sometimes deeper societal change is necessary for the fact that we have in law or policy ostensibly protections to mean that people stop getting murdered, and we can punish murderers after the fact, or we can say this is not allowed, this treatment is not allowed. But at the same time, when it happens casually every day, when trans folks hear slurs or are refused housing or lose jobs, and it's on them, the burden of all of these administrative activities are on them to challenge that activity under protections like Bill C-16, or to try to make changes or to bring those people to justice, it's still not going to happen. We need a more proactive way of protecting many different targeted groups. So to give my voice a break here, I am going to play a song, and I wanted to play some wonderful trans artists today, and one of those people is Emmett Michael, whose work I find just in many ways beautiful and haunting and meaningful, as well as simply something that can relax and soothe you in many ways. And so I'm going to play a song that I think that you might enjoy, that is from some of Emmett Michael's recent work. So if you're interested in following his work, if you've heard his interview on the show before, you can find him on Bandcamp. You can find a number of his albums, things like I Feel Like I Just Woke Up and Locksmith Hands and things like that. And so I really strongly recommend all of his work. But I want to play a song that is from the album I Hope You're Home Here, and this song is called Freedom. Emmett Michael with Freedom off of the album I Hope You're Home, and it's a beautiful song. And so I want everyone to think about, how can you support the transgender community and what can you openly do? And I think that sometimes the idea, support, or allyship that people have is, I don't hate transgender people and I do think they should have rights. Okay. Wonderful. Great starting point. I love it. I would be so happy if everyone was on that page. But transgender folks don't have the rights and protections that they should, especially on a societal level, and especially when social norms and the patriarchy continue to advance incredibly harmful views, when toxic masculinity continues to be a driving force in what murders transgender folks. So what are you doing to change things? So one of the things that I do is donate. I do this show. I follow a number of different sites that post on different trans issues. I follow trans public figures. I follow people like Jessica Durling, especially who are within Canada, who are involved in activities. And in part, I do this because even though I am a non-binary person and I'm part of the community, I have a lot of privileges. I don't feel that I'm one of the person who is, or one of the people who is most directly faced with the violence that affects our community. And for that, I'm profoundly lucky. Just by chance, I happen to be protected by a number of factors. And I happen to be lucky in the fact that I have, you know, a supportive work environment. I directly work on trans issues, so that's another thing that I do. And it was very hard for me in previous years to even consider doing the valuable work that I am doing now, because it was so hard to be directly involved in the work that highlighted the harms that the community faces. But you know, I'm profoundly lucky. I have a fabulous advisor, Dr. Tracy Peter. I have the amazing contributions of many, many young 2SLGBTQIA folks across the country who have contributed to you know, data sets and work now and likely in the future that I will be able to hopefully use to advance the rights of our community. So in terms of the transgender community and many other targeted communities, what I try to think about when I'm considering my support for them, in most cases I'm considering it as an outsider. This is one of the cases where I am part of the community, but I'll look at it as someone who's outside the community, because most people are. So if you're a cisgender person and you want to support the transgender community, ask yourself, what are you doing? Not what are you saying, not what articles are you sharing. In some ways that can help. But as I said, like there's kind of a passive element to a lot of allyship and activism. And what that can mean is that people are, you know, saying, yes, I support their rights. But really you're just saying that. So how are you actively supporting their rights? Are you in non-COVID times coming out to events? Are you being another body, another person out there that shows, hopefully, the government as well as larger society that is the group that in casual ways enacts harm on us? Are you showing physically by showing up how many people are going to say this is not an acceptable harm? Are you someone who will speak up if there is transphobic violence in front of you? And I don't mean something that has to be, you know, active physical violence. Can it be economic violence? Can it be someone not getting a job because they're trans? Can it be someone receiving a hateful slur when they're on their bus or being misaddressed at a doctor's office? If you are cisgender, you have not just the power to make a complaint, as all of us do, but you have in a lot of ways more power, because some of the work in psychology, for example, shows that people listen more to in-group members. It's an ironic kind of strange catch-22 for people who are part of a vulnerable community, but to put it in fairly casual terms, the way I interpret the results that I've seen and the attitudes people have is that people essentially say, well, of course you'd complain about that. Like, you're part of that group. You think that you should be treated better. But what we need is for people who are not part of that group to demonstrate that everyone says, no, you need to treat them as humans. You need to give them the same respect that you give me. And people are more likely to take something seriously if it comes from someone who shares their identity, if it comes from an in-group member. So this is why, for example, it's important for men to stand up against toxic masculinity and harassment, because if men are corrected by other men, it is in many cases something that the person being corrected will take more seriously than if they are corrected by someone of a different gender, for example, a woman. So if you as a cisgender person, for example, overhear at your doctor's office, a receptionist refusing to address a trans client by their proper form of address, by their proper pronouns or the proper honorific, like Miss or Mister. So say you overhear that, and I'm giving this example in part because it's a difficult thing, because many of us feel embarrassed about overhearing a situation, or that maybe it's not our place, or that we would be upsetting the person involved if we took notice of and tried to help. And some of that is valid. So sometimes, you know, the person may not want you to become involved, or may be angry or embarrassed that you've taken notice. So don't let that put you off. And I don't say that in a way like push your help past their needs. What I mean is, if you try to help and somebody is angry or upset or you're rebuffed, don't take that as a reason to never offer your help to any trans person again. So in the example that I've given, if you're in, you know, a doctor's office and you hear someone being mistreated, I do think you could quietly or respectfully offer help. You don't want to overstep in particular, because that is an intimate and private situation for many of us, you know, a doctor. But it can help for another person if they sit down for you to say, hey, I noticed that they treated you this way, and is it okay with you if I go say something about it? And so that puts the power in their hands again. And even if they say no, which can be for many valid reasons, and you need to respect that. So it's not a rejection of your help and you're like, oh, they just don't want me to help them, which I've seen this sort of dramatic attitude whenever allies don't get what they want from the community they're ostensibly trying to help. If they say no, respect that, because what they might be thinking is, if this person kicks up a fuss on my behalf, my doctor might treat me differently and I might not get the care I deserve, and maybe I'm already, the discrimination I'm already experiencing at their front desk is something that colors the rest of my care, and I can't afford, or I feel afraid of that being opposed in a lot of ways. And if that is true, or like if that's what they say in that situation, accept that. In all cases, if you are trying to help a group that is targeted, especially if you're trying to help an individual person, abide by what they tell you to do, because that is the number one thing to ensure that you don't harm that community, and also you don't overstep and trample on their rights and their voice, because it is never our right to speak for another group that is marginalized. But simply quietly and respectfully speaking to that person and offering help can be valuable, because that lets them know that people don't just sit by and think that it's okay that they're treated this way, that they don't find it acceptable. And of course, too, again, if that person is angry or embarrassed that, you know, once more transphobic behavior and discrimination has made them someone that is getting attention they're uncomfortable with, maybe they have social anxiety, maybe they're having a very difficult day and they feel raw or vulnerable, and you talking to them is just kind of one more thing. If they rebuff you or they don't want to talk, accept that, be respectful, and certainly don't respond with anger or, oh, I was just trying to help, because that is not useful, and you're not actually trying to help if you don't accept however the person responds to your help. I think that's very important. And this type of direct situation, I do want to talk about, sometimes there is no right answer, and I definitely am open to other people's feedback or opinions on this type of situation. You can email me at queerquarks@gmail.com. I'm always happy to discuss or answer questions. So one of the reasons that it's important, though, to talk about this type of situation is that it seems strange, but I think social anxiety and worries about not being polite or being rude or misstepping or being on the receiving end of someone being upset is actually what discourages a lot of acts of allyship. And so I'm going to say this, not even ironically, we need to be brave as someone who has social anxiety and I'm uncomfortable in many situations, I take medication for my anxiety to help me better function in the world. And so as someone who is immensely uncomfortable in a lot of social situations and is actively learning and working on in their life speaking up anyway, I have to say discomfort and confusion is what puts off acts of allyship more than anything else. And unfortunately, too, one of the things to accept and try to avoid, but to accept, is that you will make mistakes as an ally. And that can't mean that you stop and you say, oh, I'm never going to do this right. It means that you have to learn to do better. And this is something that you have to take in stride when you're trying to help any targeted community. So for myself in particular, for example, especially in the pandemic, I've been able to take this opportunity to read the works of many Black and Indigenous activists to try to see how they would most like to be helped. And that's really important because you're not actually an ally unless you're at offering or trying to do the things that community wants, rather than deciding as an outsider that you know what they want or need. And because too, blunders and mistakes that we might make are not uncommon. So in this example, as a white person, especially within Canada, which is a colonized land, which is what we call Canada, is built on the land stolen from Indigenous peoples, is built on the lands where many people with Black ancestry were forcibly stolen from their homelands to be enslaved and then for many generations discriminated against in North America and other places. It's my responsibility to try to learn from other people's mistakes, to try to learn instead of just blundering ahead. So you're not unique in allyship, and that can be comforting. So you will make the same mistakes in some ways that other people make. And by looking for responses to common mistakes, you can try to avoid them. So that's something in this example that I try to do to be an active ally in anti-racism, to try to best support BIPOC people. And so by looking for the many kind activists I follow who, out of the goodness of their own hearts and often unpaid, are putting out information on here's what someone did, here's why it was harmful, not helpful, here's how you can do better. Part of the huge responsibility of allyship is to look and listen and learn and try to do things properly and the way that the community you are ostensibly trying to help wants you to. So going back to the example of transgender folks, look for trans communities, look for trans activism. Don't take one person's example as holy writ in this sense. So look for multiple people's experiences. The trans community is diverse. What works for one person will not always work for another, which means that your allyship might not always be right or accepted, and being careful, conscientious, and respectful is the first step in ensuring that you are not just a useful ally to the community, but that you're not actively harming them, because it can be incredibly harmful, discouraging for a trans person to receive an offer of allyship and say, like, I know you want to help, but what you're offering or what you're doing in this sense, I don't think is the most helpful, and I would rather you do this thing. And having that ostensible ally throw up their hands and say, oh, well, I was trying to help and you just don't want it, is incredibly discouraging, not just because you then have to realize that's not a real ally, that's not someone who actually wanted to help, that's someone who maybe wanted a cookie for their help, who maybe wanted the accolades of ostensibly being an ally, but only if they got to decide what that looked like. And it's incredibly discouraging, and it can drive many folks who are a part of targeted communities to put up with some of that behavior because they don't want to feel like they're driving away potential allies. And again, it should not be on that targeted community to tiptoe around your feelings in order to accept your help. You need to be humble. You need to have humility. If you are trying to be an ally to a targeted community, you need to accept, especially that you're, as an outsider, likely part of the group that is causing them harms and may accidentally cause them harms, and that defensiveness or self-flagellation over that is not a useful way forward. So you need to do what they want you to do. So I think that there's a lot of ways to more directly and more practically help targeted communities. And as I mentioned earlier, ask yourself, what are you doing? Not what are you saying? Not, oh, well, if someone, you know, asked me if trans folks should have rights, I'd say yes. What are you doing? And I think one of the useful ways that you can start with this, if you're overwhelmed or you think, I've got so much other things going on in my life, I don't know if or how I can start this right now, set up a monthly donation. Set up a monthly donation. It can be a small amount. It can be whatever amount you can afford. Set up a monthly donation to a transgender organization, to an organization that helps trans folks, in particular one that is organized and directed by trans folks themselves. So be careful not to to donate to something that might be run by people who consider themselves allies and not be actually listening to the needs of the people they're ostensibly trying to help. Set up a $2 monthly donation right now. And I say that because everyone can afford that. That's the equivalent of buying your trans friend coffee on the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Go and set up that donation right now. Set up 5 if you can, but start with 2. Make a $2 donation and set it up to be coming out recurring monthly so that if you are overwhelmed, if this is a month where you simply can't, or you're overwhelmed by other things that you are trying to deal with, or if you're someone, for example, who deals with health issues, mental or physical health, or who is dealing with an incredibly stressful work or family situation at given times, all of these events come into our lives and make it difficult for us to be active allies, you know, 365 days a year. And that's something that I'm not unaware of, and people trying to organize and advance rights are not unaware of. But you got to start somewhere. And if you set up a recurring donation, especially, I have a recurring donation that comes out of my account every month for a BIPOC organization and for an Indigenous organization. And though I want to do more and I feel it is my responsibility to do more, if I've been overwhelmed or I've been unable to function, I know that that is there. And also I set it up recurring because I don't want to have to go and make that decision every month and go through the steps. So the kind of administrative barriers. So you can always cancel a recurring donation, you know, it's not set in stone, but setting it up takes one thing off your mind. And again, if it is a small amount, it is something that you won't even notice. I don't want to discount the fact that there are folks who are living in poverty who would notice that donation. So of course, you know, give what you can, or if you're able. And remember too that, you know, you have limits, and there are many people living in poverty who choose to, say, volunteer or things like that rather than a cash donation. And that is, of course, never something that is lesser or shameful, because you do what you can. And if you can't do money, you can do something else. Or if you are struggling just to get by yourself, you know, focus on your survival and know that when it's possible to do more, that you will. But I'm talking to the many, many people who definitely can afford $2 a month to a trans organization. And it's easy, and it's straightforward. And it's a way too that can assuage some of the worries and feelings that you have while trying to be a good ally. That's certainly, in a selfish sense, one of the reasons that I donate, is because on months where I feel overwhelmed, or when I'm trying to be a good ally and work on my allyship, and I know that I have a long way to go, I know that in my head, okay, I've set up this concrete step and it's there, and it's working while I'm working on these other things. So do those things, because it's the least you can do in a literal sense in a lot of ways. And I've got many resources that I'm going to post as well. And for example, as well for today, I might talk about this more on the show later, but I don't feel up to talking about Rita Hester's death in depth today, but I'm going to post a longer story that tells you about who she is, because it's important, and you can show how important it is to understand not just their deaths, but their lives and who they were and how they lived. So when you go and look at websites on the Trans Day of Remembrance and such too, it's also important to remember that you need to look up and be proactive and take the time to know who's been lost, who's been killed, because our history is not taught in schools. People are not taught directly about Rita Hester. I didn't know about the Trans Day of Remembrance until I was in university. There is so many steps that we need to take for people just to acknowledge that she existed and she is gone, and she fought and she wanted to live and she was working in so many ways to have a wonderful life that she wanted, and somebody took that from her by stabbing her 20 times, and the work of her family and many friends have ensured that and strive for her not being forgotten. So I do want to talk a little bit about trans folks in Winnipeg in particular. And then to leave off, I'm going to suggest some authors and resources that I'll talk a little bit more about in the coming weeks. But to give you a starting point, both on work that you could read to help you, or ways to support in a direct way the trans community, not necessarily through donations, but the holiday season's coming up. So one of the easy ways that you can support the trans community is look for someone in your family who's going to enjoy the beautiful, soulful music of Emmett Michael. And instead of, you know, buying music that comes from a cisgender artist this year, of whom there are, you know, so many, look to buy and support from transgender folks. There's many transgender folks who own small businesses. There are many people who are making jewelry and clothing and music and art. And one of the ways to support those communities is to say it specifically to yourself, I am going to look for, you know, the art and work made by these people. And I don't mean go and buy something regardless of what it is. There are lots of wonderful, beautiful trans creators out there. So what I mean is go and browse and look specifically for transgender creators and look until you find the thing that speaks to you. And then, you know, buy some of your holiday gifts from that person this year. If you're going to buy music and you're choosing between, you know, which of the artists on Bandcamp you can put your money towards. Put your money towards a trans artist. So these are very simple, very direct things. And so I do want to play you another song and again buy another trans artist, because that's something that is really important and necessary. And there are so many people that I played on the show before, wonderful people from a number of different places, like Ray Spoon and The Clicks, who are bands or individual singers who have not only gorgeous music in many ways, but sometimes make music that, like Ray Spoon does, that touches specifically on trans issues, like Do Whatever the Fuck You Want is a wonderful song, and that's something that I think speaks to a lot of trans kids. And so there's so many ways to ensure that trans folks are involved in your lives, that you are actively listening to and engaging with trans folks, not just to appreciate their individual contributions, their amazing music and stuff, but also because if you are looking for music that is new and original and you are supporting transgender artists, that's one more direct way to support the community, but also because in a lot of ways you will find people who are engaging in community work as well. So not everyone does, and again, it is not the responsibility of a targeted community to be the ones that are advancing the movements and to do that work, and certainly those people shouldn't be defined by who they are, and so I don't want to encourage that kind of thinking either. What I mean is trans folks, like cis folks, can make beautiful and amazing art and music that we should all appreciate, but also there are people who will specifically not support them because they are trans. So while striving to not objectify people or reduce them to their identity in that way,
that is one of the ways that I approach and think about my support of specific targeted groups as well, is that there are going to be people who specifically don't buy their music, maybe people who initially liked it and looked up and found that they were trans and then decided not to. So one of the things that you can do by specifically ensuring that, say, if you buy music this year is from a trans artist, is you're helping to offset that. So it's not even that you're explicitly giving them help or helping them rise above, you know, cisgender peers. You're helping to counteract the fact that they are still facing a world in which the simple stigma of who they are is going to prevent them having the same economic success as their peers and is going to provide barriers. So I want to put in a soft, lovely song that is from another artist that I admire, and that's Ryan Quesada. And one of my favorite quotes that came from 91.5 FM WRPI is, who needs a boy band when you got a guy like this? It's Ryan Quesada. So I want to play for you the song Bedroom Eyes.
I'm not ready to be somebody's baby, 'cause it's been a hard year. But after that, when it's all been said and done, I'll come running, I'll run. 'Cause after all, I always get so weird at this part in the winter. Can't even tell if that was true love I felt when I kissed her.
That was Ryan Quesada with Bedroom Eyes, and that track is up on Bandcamp, and you can buy it for $1 US or more. So I want to leave you with a couple of suggestions for further reading and education and ways to support the community yourself. So here's a good starting point, and I'm going to talk more about this next week. I'll post an article from Bustle that is on 13 transgender artists that you should be following their work, you should be reading their work. And I'm going to talk more in the coming weeks about some of the people whose work I enjoy, specifically some of the stories from trans communities that I think can be really useful starting point for friends and relatives and that I have in my own library. I also want to say a good place to go is transfigureprint.com, and so this is a company where you can buy shirts that say protect trans kids, and where you can buy apparel that not only overtly supports the trans community, which we all should be doing, or that represents your identity if you're trans yourself, But they donate from the money that they have. And so you can go and check out where the money is going, to whom. You can also, you know, go there and apply for financial help and stuff. So this is something that, of course, is US-based, and I'm also looking for and talking about Canadian ones. This just happens to be one that I have bought from in the past. And another one that I want to bring up is if you're looking to, say, support trans creators, then one of the good places to look for is Etsy, where there's a number of shops that it's difficult because people don't necessarily need to or should disclose their identity necessarily, you know. It's not something where we should expect that they have to do that before we give them our support, because of course nobody has the responsibility of disclosing to us who they are in order to get that support. But if you love bright, beautiful prints, one of the artists that I love is So Lazo, they them. And they're an illustrator and tattoo artist from El Salvador. They currently live in Berlin, but online you can find a variety of their stuff. And I'm bringing that up because it is winter and it is going to be cold and difficult and hard for all of us because we're stuck inside. And personally, one of the ways that I combat this is with color and brightness and a lot of the things that help me to feel more like I'm not going through seasonal affective disorder times. So that's someplace that I really recommend because I love Solazo's work. And Teal Pansy Jewelry is another amazing creator. So this is queer and trans made jewelry and candles. Also, they're very body positive. And I can't recommend enough just the cool, unusual stuff that they make. So I've ordered some earrings where, you know, one hanging is a crystal and one is in a little tiny folding knife. It's so interesting and powerful, their work, and I'm hoping right now in the process of arranging an interview with the creators, with Brettley and Wyatt, to talk about, you know, their journey and what they're doing. And finally, I want to leave you off with a quote from a local trans elder. And so I will be talking more about this as well in the coming weeks if I'm up to it, because again, sometimes I find it emotionally difficult to talk about these issues on the show. So you might have heard me mention quotes from Charlotte Nolan before. She's a Métis trans elder in Winnipeg. And she and other elders are profoundly important to our community, both because of the beautiful people they are and the work that they're doing, and because of what I previously mentioned in that we don't have many of them. So many of them have been taken away from us. And it's frightening. So in this article on Trans Day of Remembrance on cbc.ca, the most powerful thing is the quote at the start that I see from Charlotte Nolan, and it said, and her quote is, "All we want is recognition as human beings." So keep that in mind. Definitely read that article and other resources and work by trans folks and ensure that you're listening. And that's it for me. Until next week.